Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We are glad that you are with us. Today marks the beginning of Prairie Public's fall radio membership drive, and it comes at a pivotal moment. Just yesterday, Prairie Public officially lost 20% of our annual budget due to cuts in federal funding. Combined with reductions from the state, this is the most significant financial challenge we've faced in decades. But here's the heart of it. Prairie Public belongs to you, our listeners, and our communities. More than ever, your support is what keeps trusted news, enriching programs, and vital services on the air across North Dakota and the region. Beginning today, your donation will power Prairie Public through this critical time. You can give online at prairiepublic.org or by calling us at 800-359-4145. Together, we can keep local voices strong, independent, and connected. Please join us in sustaining public media today. As we begin Main Street today, we are honored to be joined by North Dakota State University President David Cook, who just delivered his annual State of the University address and also presided over an exhaustive week of homecoming activities on the campus of North Dakota State University. And with enrollment climbing, groundbreaking research underway, new programs in artificial intelligence and major campus investments on the horizon, Cook says that now is our moment at NDSU, and we'll talk about the university's progress, challenges, and vision for the future. President Cook, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you, Craig. It's my privilege. I appreciate the opportunity to talk today.
The genesis for me wanting to speak with you was the announcement from the university about the Honors College, described as a place now where AI will be viewed as transformative. What core problems or opportunities, Mr. President, as we start, motivated NDSU to create an Honors College focused on AI? And how did the initiative evolve from idea to reality next year?
Yeah, well, great question. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about our new Honors College. So the college will be an opportunity for us to really identify the best and brightest students. And they would be locally, regionally, but even nationally, to really tackle the next big challenges and that's facing our society. And of course, we believe that AI is going to be a part of really, and it already is in so many ways, every function of what we're working and how society is changing in higher ed and beyond. And so the goal here is to bring 30 students forward next fall to be part of the inaugural class of the Honors College. And then if you kind of multiply that 30 times four, you know, over 4 years, you're going to have 120 students there. And what we're going to do is bring, you know, really allow them to have access to our top faculty to really tackle these societal challenges. I would say AI is a big part of it, but there's a philosophy that underpins the Honors College. It's really an abundance mindset, the belief that excellence multiplies when it is shared, where opportunity sparks innovation, innovation fuels success, and success creates room for every student to rise. In other words, we're all going to do more and better together. I think if we find ways to work together, and AI is going to be a centerpiece for that. So that's kind of the initial idea. I can certainly talk more about that.
Well, this was made possible because of major philanthropic support for this particular program. What was the message behind that support in your eyes, Mr. President?
Right. I mean, we have benefactors, a handful of them, who really believe that the future is going to be all about this abundance mindset that I just described a moment ago. And rather than thinking about things from a scarcity perspective, how can we all work together and see opportunity in that if we all come together to tackle real world big challenges, big problems, thinking bigger than we've ever thought before is a big part of it. And they have a deep appreciation and belief that NDSU is the institution who can lead this kind of an effort. You know, a lot of AI sometimes is grounded, you know, in the life sciences and the technology side. And these are places where we have incredible tradition at NDSU, and we have a great foundation to build on. And so we appreciate their belief in us, and we're going to deliver.
There's incredible pressure relative to AI, how it's brought forward in society, how it's brought forward at universities, and you're going to grapple with tough questions about bias, about privacy, about algorithmic accountability, and social impacts of automation, either in this honors program in or another computer science focus that is also a part of the university. This is different than just coding and engineering, isn't it?
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the curriculum will be interdisciplinary. We're going to bring people together, faculty together, and actually faculty from across the United States, from some of the hotbeds where the greatest research and work and deep thinking is happening. So we're bringing expertise, you know, from other areas of the United States and even globally to the campus to give our students opportunities they would have never had before. But yeah, to your point, I mean, with any kind of new innovation, it's going to bring a level of excitement, but also a little trepidation. And certainly with AI, there's so much we can do with it. I can appreciate that sometimes folks might, you know, be a little concerned. And so that's the idea of bringing different disciplines together, bringing our best students together to make sure that we are creating deep thinkers, but also ethical leaders when they leave NDSU. So this isn't about, you know, technical education or understanding coding, as you alluded to, but it's thinking deeply about the ethical implications of AI. And so, and I think making sure that, you know, bias and privacy and accountability are central to the kind of education they receive. So when they leave our institution, they're going to be leaders thinking differently and about where we're going with society. Because what we think AI is today, just wait 5 minutes and it's going to change. And so we need to have people, and I think the future is going to be these young students who have grown up with this, helping us all kind of traverse our future with this kind of an education.
Isn't that always the case with tech, Mr. President, that the young people Yes. will lead the way? Before we leave the topic of AI, Mr. President, if I were a parent talking to my young person about what his or her college experience would be like, and we have AI as an influencer maybe on what vocations may or may not be more available in the future, has that impacted your students, Mr. President, on how they are approaching their education at NDSU, wondering, geez, AI might make me, you know, not worth anything here in just a year or two?
Yeah, no, I don't think so at all. I think AI is going to have an incredibly important role in all of this. And as a research university, as a leading university in our state and region, I think our goal is to figure out ways on how to embrace new innovation and technology, and AI is at the centerpiece of all that. And it's going to change everything that we do. And we need to figure out how to lead through that, how we teach, how students learn, what should be in the curriculum, what kind of research we're doing, and that across all disciplines, what is the role of faculty? So, you know, faculty are going to have to teach differently with AI and embrace it and be excited about that and be a place where students want to learn in a new environment that prepares them for the future. We can't, you know, this is not the time to sit back on our heels, but rather to get excited about the future and think differently and make sure students know that if they come to NDSU, that's the kind of environment they're going to be in. And we're pretty excited about that.
On to enrollment and recruitment. You talked about this in your State of the University address of in not only recruiting students, but also recruiting faculty. Your enrollment has stabilized to some extent, Correct. Down from a high of a few years ago, but it's about 12,000 students. What are your strategies and how are you changing your mindset to recruit that first cohort, not only in the Honors College, but also across all areas of study at the university?
Yeah, you touched on it, Craig. So we had been dropping enrollment for a number of years. I've been here for just over 3 years. And so with that, the way we're funded in our state, with enrollment declines comes revenue declines. And so I decided to really take a step back and I would say create the right kind of foundation for the university for the long term, not taking any shortcuts whatsoever, but deciding what's the right foundation where we need to be to be successful. And that what came with that were some tough decisions. So we've cut about 80 FTE since I've been here. We've cut or will be cutting probably roughly about 24 million. We've had 7 academic colleges. We now have 5. So a lot of work's been done in that regard. And then we put in a what I would call a P&L, basically a profit and loss budget model, to just get us thinking a little bit more about how to be as effective and as efficient as possible. And so that's challenging, but also incredibly rewarding. It's allowed us to create the right kind of foundation for long-term success. So I'm proud of what we've done there, because we've stabilized enrollment, as you said. We have core academic programs that we have a great belief in. The legislature has been incredibly good to us in terms of investing in some new workforce-oriented academic degrees this last session. And so we're at the forefront of standing those up. And it's about recruiting students who align with the workforce needs of, you know, North Dakota and our region into these programs that are going to be cutting edge. And that's the game plan.
Is the demographic of the students who are coming to the university for the first time changing? More in-state students, more students from the region. What about international students that other universities have expressed concerns about being able to attract and recruit?
Yeah, so, you know, our student, you know, we tend to have about, we're right on the border with Minnesota. So on the undergraduate side, we tend to have, you know, close to half Minnesota kids, close to half North Dakota kids. We're very proud of that. I think we are, you know, recruiting, you know, future talent from Minnesota to come fill these jobs in North Dakota when you're bringing those students in. We're very unique in that regard. So we're proud there. On the graduate side, you're going to have a lot more diversity in terms of students coming from all over the United States, but also internationally. We have increased a little bit on the international just overall enrollment side. So those things are all happening. But what I'd probably say is, you know, one of the biggest shifts has been, and I'd probably say the last 5 years, is students coming in with more college credit. So what we call dual credit. And so the state board just passed an opportunity to allow NDSU to do dual credit in Cass County, because students have been coming into NDSU with about 15 credit hours on average. That's over a semester on average. So they're coming in with a lot of that enrollment already. And so now with a new state board policy that was passed about a week ago, we're allowed to sort of engage and play in that space. And we're really excited about it, because I think the future of higher ed, we've been talking about AI and all the rest, but it's also making seamless pathways in the K-12 world. You know, we always think about these things as so separate, but they're really interwoven. And so our opportunity to engage right here in our backyard more with high school kids, you know, trying to keep them local kids local, but also just creating opportunities for those students to learn is really exciting for us. And so we're very appreciative of this policy change and are looking forward to engaging more in that space.
We're enjoying our conversation with the president of North Dakota State University, David Cook. He just delivered his fourth annual State of the University address. Mr. President, relative to diversity and inclusion, many universities have felt a lot of external pressure on how they want to bring forward any diversity and equity and inclusion programs, if any at all. How's that impacted the university?
Well, you know, we continue to invest in where our priorities are. I think one of the programs I'm very proud of is a program called Bison Bridge. Bison Bridge is a program where we take, you know, students with an underserved background, first generation students. These are the students we know, just statistically at NDSU, but everywhere, really have a hard time succeeding in college. They're the ones that tend to, you know, not retain, not progress, not get a degree. So, you know, since I've been here, we've made it a priority to really invest in these students. And we have about 30 of those come in. We have them come in the summer. We wrap services around them because they haven't grown up in an environment or a background where they just have a natural safety net or support network to help them be successful. Then we connect them with older students who've had similar backgrounds with them to help them, say, to be role models, to be mentors. And so this is a real priority for me in particular. I'm a first generation college student, so my mom and dad did not go to college. I have that lived experience of going off to school and really being overwhelmed, struggling a little bit and not thinking I belonged. And, you know, I figured it out, right? Then I went to graduate school and it was deja vu all over again. But I do have a soft spot in my heart for students who come from a different background where college is out of reach or seemingly, and proving them wrong and proving them that they can be successful. So, you know, I think it's critical for us to, you know, invest in these kind of opportunities. And that's what we continue to do.
Is diversity still a goal of yours, Mr. President?
Yeah, and diversity can be defined in lots of different ways. And so, you know, we need to embrace that in all, you know, in all different ways that we need to just make sure that the university is being successful.
At a time, Mr. President, when many families are asking, is college worth it? It kind of lends to your Bison Bridge program. How is NDSU providing return on investment in concrete terms? Cost of degree, student debt at graduation, time to job, median starting salary, all of those things, licensure and placement test results rates, yeah, et cetera. Are you concerned, yeah, that more and more parents are asking that question?
Well, I think more and more parents should be asking that question. So I'm not concerned about it at all. I'm a parent. I have three kids, and my last, I have one that just graduated and moved off to Hawaii of all places for his first job, and a daughter in graduate school. And so, you know, I understand, and we need to make sure what we're doing is relevant and appropriate, and there is an ROI. I mean, it's always historically been about education and knowledge, and I believe deeply in that, but also making sure that we're preparing them for the next step after graduation. And NDSU has a great track record in that space. Our graduates, when they graduate, over 90% of them will graduate, get a job, or go on to graduate school. I think the number is 94% of those. That's very high. We feel very good about that. The students who are from North Dakota, when they graduate, they over 80% of them get jobs in North Dakota. The Minnesota kids, over 40% of them, when they're done, stay in the state. So again, I said earlier that we are recruiting talent, future talent. So they're coming here and they're getting the kind of relevant education they need to be successful when they leave. And then I would also add that, you know, I mentioned before a lot of the transformation, a lot of the challenges that we had to do as we had to shut down. I think it's 29 different academic degrees or merge them. What we've now done, though, is stood up degrees. So we had to make the tough decision to reduce some degrees that were kind of high cost, low enrollment. But the new degrees we're standing up are relevant to our state and relevant to our region. And we're proud of that. And we are doing that very deliberately. So we're making sure when students come, they're pursuing degrees and education and opportunity that are relevant to them, you know, when they leave. And so we're very excited about the future there and feel very good about kind of, I'd say, the covenant that we have with moms and dads and students.
President Cook, many universities, NDSU included, have experienced research funding concerns. Some universities have labeled it a crisis. NDSU still benefits from federal funding support in many programs. However, that number's dropped. How are you working with state and federal partners? And what are your federal partners telling you about your ability to safeguard the research that you've started? And do you have contingency plans there if those grant funding resources continue to decline?
Yeah, so, well, you know, our federal expenditures are doing quite, and we're doing quite well in the grant space. We've had the best years we've had in recent years. I think this last year we were top four that we've ever had. So, you know, research at NDSU is in a good place. So I want to be clear that we're proud of what we're doing there, and a lot of exciting, you know, one of our biggest grants, or perhaps our biggest grant in our history, a $160 million grant that's about entrepreneurship and agriculture technology and working with tribal communities, you know, is one that we just got here in recent years that we continue to invest in. So there's a lot of really good things happening in that regard. Now, certainly at the federal landscape, there's been a lot of shifting that's been happening, a lot of topics or policy issues that have been raised, and then and we've addressed those, and a lot of those are kind of tied up in litigation right now too. So there's some uncertainty, but we have to respond and think differently and look at the big beautiful bill, if you will. There's some great opportunities in that bill for us too. But yeah, there's no question that it's shifting and changing, and that's going to create new challenges, but certainly new opportunities. And we're looking for, you know, there's some great agriculture opportunities in the new beautiful bill, but there's certainly some struggles in there too. But this is the new reality that's in front of us, and we have to continue to invest and build on the great success that we've had recently.
We all woke up this morning, Mr. President, that the federal government has shut down. How will that impact the university?
Well, we're hoping that this is something that, you know, can be expedited and everybody can get on the same page, of course, just for our country and for society. But, you know, they're dealing with really challenging issues. And so, you know, we're prepared for this. You mentioned on the research front, trying to get a sense of the impact that will happen there, some other federal dollars that come in to support some student work. But I think we're prepared for this to for this day to come. And so we've been monitoring it and hoping that we can all our leaders can come together and make our country, you know, better as part of all of this struggle. But yeah, certainly we're all watching it to see where it takes us.
As we wrap up our conversation, President Cook, there's often speculation. You've heard it. I hear it every day as to whether the Bison should move its football program from the FCS to the FBS. Do you feel pressure for the Bison to make that jump with the world as it is today? Or do you believe the program is competing right where it should be competing?
Well, I'll tell you, with Bison Athletics, whether it's football or any sport, there's pressure every single day there. We have a very high bar. We have excellent leadership with Matt Larson as our athletic director. It's incredible for me to walk into this role and just see this history of success that where we punch above our weight. And so I'll tell you, once you set the bar that high, no matter the sport, there's always going to be pressure. And we have incredible coaches across the way as well. And it all starts, of course, with our student athletes who nobody has better student athletes than NDSU. So I tell you, there's always pressure for us to win. There's always pressure for us to try to think about, you know, where we can take the winning. And certainly with the kind of success we've had at the FCS level, there's, you know, pressure and opinions from all different stakeholders. And we want to compete at the level that we're best suited for and we're most aligned with. And
which level is that, Mr. President?
Well, the reality is right now, I will tell you, Craig, is that the landscape of college athletics period is quite tumultuous. And at the moment, we're trying to figure that out and trying to see, I mean, incredible change like we've never seen. A lot of opinions about what might happen at the top levels. And so I think at the moment, we're just, you know, kind of trying to take it all in and get a sense of where this is all headed. I think there's going to be a little uncertainty here for another year or two. And when the dust settles, I think every college president and every athletic director is going to try to see, okay, what makes the most sense for our athletic program. And that's exactly what we're doing.
Mr. President, there's more to talk about. Thank you, NDSU President David Cook. I appreciate your sharing your thoughts on the state of your university. Talked about student success and research. Lots of interesting things happening at the university, not just here in North Dakota, at the university level across the country. And I appreciate your candor today. And certainly you can find more about the initiatives we've talked about at ndsu.edu. But thank you, President Cook, for visiting with us today on Main Street.
Thank you, Craig. I appreciate the opportunity. Have a great day.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by LiveWire, a provider of live event audio, video, lighting, staging, and streaming services for events, conferences, and meetings across the Prairie region and around the country. More information at livewirenow.com.
We're live in the Main Street studio. I'm Craig Blumenschein, host of Main Street, and you're listening to us here on member-supported Prairie Public. It's about 3:29 in the afternoon. We are member-supported, and this is a critical time for us, and we have something very serious to talk with you about this afternoon. Bottom line, we need to hear from you. We're asking you to make a donation now to prairiepublic.org or give us a call at 800-359-4145. We've all heard the news, or at least our listeners have heard the news, how much our budget has been impacted. Yesterday was the very last day that we received federal support. Now it's time for everyone to step up and make Prairie Public continue on. And that's exactly our plan. With me is Todd McDonald. Todd is a reporter here at Prairie Public, and you can certainly count on Main Street to tell stories of our towns, our neighbors, and our lives here on the prairie. And behind every headline that we kick out is a journalist who's dedicated to this place. And Todd, that's you, because this is a place we call home.
It is indeed. I've called it home for the majority of my life. So, I have a stake in this game.
We all do.
And so we're encouraging you to go to the phone this afternoon. Call 800-359-4145. Or go online to prairiepublic.org. Make that pledge of support. You know, back in 2001, and this is kind of a really weird
this
coincidence.
It's a history lesson for me. Yeah.
Yeah. 2001, Prairie Public raised $68,345. That was our most successful fall fundraiser ever. And I will say, maybe this is not a good omen, but that was the first membership drive that I was involved in. 2001, 24 years ago. So this fall, we're aiming to set a new record with $70,000 in membership contributions. So, you know, it's $70,000, but, you know, that was 24 years ago, and a lot has changed since then. More than half of our members now, well, they give as monthly sustainers. That provides a steady, reliable support all year long, and that consistent revenue is vital. It allows us to focus less on goals and more on the programs you count on. So, you know, that's what we would say in a normal membership drive. Craig, we know this year is different. As you mentioned, it's the new fiscal year, so welcome to October. And our federal funding was cut as of this morning, and state funding, well, we can go back to the legislative session and find out what we lost out there. All in all, that means that we need your support more than ever. So today, we can start this new fiscal year strong and write the next year as a great chapter in Prairie Public's history. So please make your gift today at prairiepublic.org, 800-359-4145.
Todd, I really view this as one of the most critical moments in Prairie Public's history.
It's definitely an existential moment, yeah.
What I'd like to believe is that Prairie Public doesn't belong to us, Todd, to those of us who work here at Prairie Public. It belongs to our listeners, to our neighbors, to our communities, and to our friends. And it's their support that keeps trusted news that you bring us each and every day, that Dave Thompson brings us each and every day, that Danielle Webster brings us each and every day, and enriching thoughtful programs like Main Street that I feel honored to bring our listeners every day, and of course the vital services that air across Prairie Public and the region. It's important that you give us a call right now or online at prairiepublic.org.
Still to come on Main Street, Prairie Beat takes a closer look at North Dakota Attorney General Drew Wrigley's investigation into Fargo area students' alleged use of Snapchat to create and share sexually explicit images that's now expanded with new search warrants at Davies High School, dozens of seized phones, and many identified victims, some involving AI-generated content. That and our fall membership drive rolls on. That's ahead on Main Street after this news.
The October film series for Cinema 100 opens on Thursday, October 2nd with Bob Trevino Likes It, followed by four more recently released films, including the documentary Architecton on October 9th and the Chinese film Caught by the Tide. Each of the five films of the series is shown twice on Thursdays at 3 and 6 p.m. at the Grand 22 Theaters in Bismarck. More information is available on the Cinema 100 Facebook page.
I'm Craig Blumenschein here at Prairie Public. We're live in the Main Street studio with my friend and colleague Todd McDonald. We are asking you to become a pledging, supporting member of Prairie Public. And our message this fall membership drive, Todd, is that now is it's an important time for us. This is a critical time in our history. We have publicized well, I think, that our budget has been chopped by both state and federal funding sources to the extent of $2.5 million. We're out, but we're not gone, or we're, I guess, down, but we're not gone. And we're asking folks to find it within themselves to power us, in a sense, because we need your help. We're hoping that you can make your gift today by going to our website at prairiepublic.org or by giving us a call, 800-359-4145. We're about local journalism, Todd. We're about heart. We're about community. And we're about North Dakota. We're not about the national programs we could be left with if not for our wonderful supporting members here at Prairie Public.
Exactly. Listeners like you make it possible. And, you know, Craig, I guess the early mantra that was set for us is defunded but not defeated. And I think that's a good rallying point around us because, as you mentioned, Prairie Public is rooted here. Everybody from the newsroom lives in North Dakota. We vote here. We care about what happens here. And, you know, that's what makes our local coverage a little different. It's not parachuted in. It's not from some large mothership in Texas or something. It's personal. Dave is probably the greatest news director I have ever worked with, and maybe he could be the greatest news director in the world. But he will actually give us freedom to avoid the headline du jour and instead look at something that is very North Dakota-centric that you won't be hearing on the national level. But he said, yeah, get that instead, because this is what makes our coverage different. And at the same time, the budget cuts are real. As of today, we're operating with significantly fewer resources. This could mean fewer voices from our community making it on the air. But these stories, you know, they shape our towns. The people, they make a difference, and they deserve to be heard. So we need to hear from you to help keep telling these stories. Donate today by going online to prairiepublic.org or call 800-359-4145.
We've talked a lot about $2.5 million that Prairie Public has lost. What is that, Todd? Well, that's about one-fifth of our annual funding, and it's now taken effect. The rescission is real, and the impact has started. Todd, it's now in the news that we've lost 12 positions, and we're going to work hard to have a pledge drive like this and ask our members for their wonderful support that we much appreciate. PrairiePublic.org.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Health Partners, offering a simplified approach to health plans, customer service, and community partnerships in North Dakota. Learn more at healthpartners.com/Dakota Plans.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. It's almost incomprehensible to think of the school and everyday stresses of Gen Z and Gen Alpha. Growing up or coming of age during a global pandemic and the unprecedented time we're in are two big things, but a third has got to be navigating life online. In this week's Prairie Beat, we take a look at one school's struggle with the online exploitation of some of their students.
Before we begin, a disclaimer. This episode will contain difficult subject matter that may be troubling to hear. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey there, I'm Eric Detridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We're back once again for another episode of Prairie Beat.
Hey, thanks for holding down the fort for me last week, Danielle, as I took a few days away from the office. Well, I am back and ready to get into some discussion on the news here in North Dakota. What is on the beat this week?
Well, when you were gone last week, we got an update on how the statewide ban of cell phones in North Dakota schools is going. A middle school principal from West Fargo was who I talked to for that story, and she told me things are going pretty well, and they're very pleased with what they're seeing in the halls and lunchrooms so far. Now, just a day before that episode dropped, another local headline came forward that students at Davies High School in Fargo were being investigated for sharing illicit images on Snapchat. And it struck a chord with me because of one of the things Amber Rudolph, principal at Cheney Middle School, said to me about why they actually began limiting cell phone use in their school 2 years ago.
A student airdrops an inappropriate picture of a classmate, and practically the whole lunchroom saw that picture. It was horrible. Just like toothpaste, once it's out, you can't get it back in. It was really hard to mitigate that damage. That girl's social, emotional well-being was really affected. And, like, you know, it probably will be for the rest of her life because of that picture.
The airdrop. Gosh, you could pretty much do anything with that, right? I mean, it's just really horrible to hear about that. As the dad of a daughter myself, it certainly hits pretty hard for me. It's only in like three more years and then in the middle school years. And wow, it's not hard to see why getting rid of phones in school would help with the distractions. I can't really find too many arguments against it.
And unfortunately, one of the things we are seeing is that just because you can't have a phone in school anymore, it doesn't mean nefarious or even illegal activity can't happen among students. North Dakota Attorney General Drew Wrigley held a news conference at Fargo City Hall this week about the investigation into what he called a web of the sharing of child sex abuse material, or CSAM.
It's a sensitive matter to investigate, I have to say, because of the setting and because of the ages of so many of the people involved, both as victims and as potential subjects of the investigation. Our immediate focus was, and our immediate focus is going to remain, the safety and the well-being of all of the people that are involved.
He went on to explain that back in April, a school resource officer, or SRO, at a middle school in West Fargo learned about an image that was being shared on Snapchat. It was being used to harass a student at that school. And when he forwarded that information to the West Fargo Police Department, they got the North Dakota Bureau of Criminal Investigation, or BCI, involved. And then they found that the image was actually created 2 years ago when that student was in elementary school.
Yikes.
And it was basically of this student's face. AI was used to create an inappropriate picture of that student. BCI was able to involve Snapchat in investigating the matter. And unfortunately, many more images depicting several more students were discovered, as well as a whole network of other students who were involved in sharing those images.
All right. So you're listening to Prairie Beat right now, so you're digitally savvy, I imagine. But just in case, a little primer for those that don't know about Snapchat. These images appear literally for about 15 seconds, and then they're supposedly gone. Like, delete is like the sort of benefit that Snapchat advertises, is that it's there and it's gone. But it doesn't mean that it's not, you know, passed around or shared some way, right?
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't actually disappear forever either. It exists in the app.
Everything exists, even if you delete it, as we're finding out. But I mean, so these students, right, that you're talking about, are these all Davies High School students?
Wrigley says right now the focus is mainly on Davies High School, but he did say that students from multiple schools are connected to the investigation, either as victims or subjects. And that's all he could say at this point.
So, okay, when you say things like a quote-unquote web of sharing or a network, I mean, you know, you hear about the underground, the dark web, and all this stuff. I mean, how many students are we talking about who are seeing these images?
He said that they so far have issued 2 search warrants for phones connected to the investigation. In the first warrant, it was 24 phones. And the second warrant was for an additional 30 phones, and that's just in the past week.
Yeah, that's over 50 phones. It's truly astonishing, but it brings to mind a couple of things. I mean, one thing I know is that he has made clear, and he has stressed, that not every phone includes people who are looking at the images, but they just might have received the mm-hmm. images. But also as a parent, too, you know, thinking of my kid down the line, having the government or the long arm of the law, if you will, like taking people's phones. I mean, in mass, is there any question about like sort of invasion of privacy of these kids?
He did say that they're implicitly looking for illegal activity. So it's not activity that, you know, maybe somebody inadvertently received.
You know, it makes me think, too, because Davies is so close to the Red River. The Red River on the other side is Minnesota. Makes me think of federal crimes and the FBI involved. Does any of this jump to the level of federal crimes?
He wasn't able to definitively say that yet, but he did say it was a possibility. For now, they plan to hand the case over to the Cass County State's Attorney's Office, and a number of charges are being looked at.
The unlawful creation, possession, or dissemination of sexually expressive images, the promoting and directing of an obscene sexual performance by a minor, promoting obscenity to minors, terrorizing, simple assault, conspiracy.
You know, I'm not often left speechless, as you know, Danielle, and and I know kids can sometimes get up to some shenanigans. I mean, we all did when we were kids. I was a kid once. You were a kid once.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly wasn't perfect back in the 1980s. It was, you know, just bullying and rumors in school. I say just. It doesn't mean it didn't have mental health effects and consequences. But, man, this is a whole different ball game, and I can't think of how life-altering it's going to be for a significant number of kids in the community, especially those whose images or fake images or whatever have been distributed. I just can't imagine the mental health counseling they're going to need now and for a very long time.
Absolutely. And, you know, Wrigley has said that so far cooperation has been positive across the board with Snapchat, the schools, all the way down to the parents and students involved. And he's appreciative of that. He also said that, unfortunately, in cases like this, when it's discovered, it's rarely just one instance. It only grows and reaches further as more is uncovered. And one of the crimes he mentioned, too, that terrorizing, he really wanted to emphasize the seriousness of this activity because it's causing real damage and lasting harm to students and their families. Many have been bullied, harassed, and have needed counseling. Some have even changed schools.
Mm.
When I graduated college, you know, that was back when Facebook was really starting to take off. And I remember, you know, my friends and I were going through our profiles and deleting pictures of ourselves, you know, holding beers and stuff and like
this
that in our
hands. Almost quaint.
Exactly. Thinking that, you know, oh, if a prospective employer saw this, it might hurt our chances of getting jobs. But, you know, truthfully, Eric, I cannot imagine what it must be like for not just college students, but we're talking about high school, middle school. Even elementary level students having to learn about stuff like this and the lifelong implications.
Yeah, you know, it's really a double-edged sword because obviously phones and social media and, yeah, even AI can all be great tools when used correctly. The possibilities truly are endless. AI is here to stay. It'll make our lives more efficient and better in a lot of ways, but of course there's a lot of dark side to it too, being that it can also be weaponized in ways we could never have even imagined. I mean, not even science fiction could have imagined all this stuff. I know in last week's episode, Principal Rudolph said they have resources to teach students about digital literacy and safety. Is that enough?
Wrigley compared it, oddly enough, to fighting and mitigating the flu. He says, you know, we can't eradicate the flu. It's here to stay. But we have learned things that we can do to slow it down with various prevention matters. And he says, as you just mentioned, these tools are here. They're here to stay. They're not going anywhere. The best thing we can do is talk to our kids and keep those open, honest conversations going about the real consequences. He talked about the illegality of creating and sharing these images and about the realities for victims.
I think there's some perception that, oh, I bet that's embarrassing. It's more than embarrassing. It's debasing. It's durable. It doesn't go away. They understand it's on the internet. It is permanent. They are sending it out. They're blasting it out to all sorts of folks and showing it to who? And when I walk into a room, who has seen that image?
Now, at this point in the episode, we usually take a zoom out and view some other stories from the Prairie Public Newsroom. But hey, this week we want to make sure we also shine a light on a pretty historic change we are undergoing here at Prairie Public, as today is our very first day without funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Yeah, and you know, this is a significant portion of our funding model that is permanently going away. John Harris, our CEO, has said, you know, immediately our listeners won't notice changes right away,
But
changes are happening behind the scenes and choices are being made. And it's just a really difficult time for us here at Prairie Public.
One thing we do want to stress, we are here. We're going to be here. You're not going to notice, like Danielle said, a whole lot of change. The programming is going to be what it is, what you enjoy right now. We have made steps into the digital space where you are. You are listening online to this podcast. We recognize your time is valuable. You don't have a lot of time to put your ear to the radio at a certain time of day. You're busy, but you care about your community. You want to hear about local and regional news, and so we encapsulated it a little bit for you with this podcast. I hope that it is keeping you nice and informed, but membership dollars helps keep the radio operation going, but it also allows us to do these kind of things. It takes resources and time, resources from listeners like you, and you know what? Here's what you could do. Just go to prairiepublic.org. You can make a donation there on the homepage. Just click on the red donate button. $10, $15 a month, whatever fits in your budget, and we will continue to make space for your busy schedule and create a one-of-a-kind original digital content thanks to people like you.
Try and think of it a little bit as maybe another subscription service that you're subscribed to, only this time you get to choose how much to give every month. I kind of like to think of it that way. That'll do it this week for us here on Prairie Beat. You can be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more headlines from the Prairie Public Newsroom. You can also check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, catch you next time. I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
Prairie Beat. It's one of our excellent Prairie Public podcasts, and you can subscribe wherever you get your favorites.
The Fargo Public Library presents their Fall Into Jazz concerts featuring local jazz artists Saturdays, October 4th through the 25th, starting at 4 p.m. at the Downtown Main Library. More information at fargolibrary.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for October 1st. October is Archives Month, a time to celebrate the records in archives across the country and recognize the archivists who preserve and share information of lasting value. The North Dakota State Archives, part of the State Historical Society of North Dakota, holds a collection of papers compiled by local WPA workers during the 1930s. These include interviews and gathered histories about people, places, customs, ghost towns, and the ethnic groups that helped shape North Dakota. One collection organizes personal stories by ethnic background. Two interviews are connected to Luxembourg. The first is with John Richard Sr. of Wahpeton. He was born in Hostra, Luxembourg, then part of Germany in 1849. His interview reflects on life before and after immigrating to the U.S. He said, "We left Germany to better our condition financially and to enjoy more freedom. My father sold all of his personal property, which was more than enough to pay for our transportation to America. All we brought was our clothing." After marrying an American-born Luxembourger in Minnesota, Richard moved his family to Wahpeton. He remained there after his wife's passing in 1927, living with his son. He emphasized the importance of newspapers. "We have always spoken German at our home until the children started school. I subscribed to Volkszeitung and Wanderer, German newspapers from St. Paul. We also take the Wahpeton Times and Wahpeton Globe. My only recreation at this present time is reading newspapers." The second interview is with George Steinmetzer, who lived in Ross. Born in Garne, Luxembourg, in 1860, his family moved to France before his father settled in St. Cloud, Minnesota. He encouraged George to come to America too, writing, "There was lots of work in America, and wages were better." He also wrote about homesteads. "There were no opportunities to get ahead in France, so we decided America was best." Though Steinmetzer didn't speak English and had no farming experience at first, he later said, "There isn't much to comparing this country with any European country. This country is better in every way I can think of." Hear more of WPA interviews at the North Dakota State Archives during Archives Month. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Sarah Walker. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
We are glad that you are with us as we wind up Main Street here at Prairie Public on this first day of October. I'm Craig Blumenschein, host and producer of Main Street. We are, again, appreciative that you are here with us. We are asking our listeners now to consider their support of Prairie Public, and they can do so by going to prairiepublic.org or by calling us at 800-359-4145. With me is Todd McDonald, my friend, a reporter here at Prairie Public. Todd,
good afternoon.
I really feel that public media matters. That's why we are in the business that we are in. It's one of the few places, and we work hard, I think, to make sure that our news is independent, that our voices are local, and the stories we get to tell, and it's an honor for us to tell them, are stories about our community. Mm-hmm. It's not something about what happens in New Hampshire or something that happens, you know, on the East Coast or the Left Coast or the West Coast or whatever you want to call it. It's about what happens here in North Dakota. We are not for profit, and we work in a time when trust in what we do is fragile. Todd, yeah, I think
very.
We recognize that, but we hope to educate, connect, and inspire, and we can't do it, Todd, without listener support.
Exactly. Now, you know, of course, the radio audience can't see this, but I just looked at this mug. There's a mug sitting on the desk in here, right next to the microphones, and it's this white mug, and it just says NPR 50, Hear Every Voice. And boy, with the cuts and everything that we've encountered and just the decisions we're having to make now, I'm hoping that we'll still be around to have Hear Every Voice, NPR 60. So this is where you come in. Whether you're in Fargo, Fort Yates, Belcourt, rally around this moment. Over half of our members are sustainers. They give monthly to provide steady support. And that constant funding, well, that helps us focus on great programming, not just fundraising. But after the deep cuts to public funding, we need you now, and we cannot do it without you. So be part of this moment. Give today at prairiepublic.org, prairiepublic.org, Prairie Public being all one word, or call 800-359-4145. let's hear your voice, represent your town. I want to read some names off, like, Mabel Johnson called in from Wishick. So we'd like to hear from you this afternoon.
We sure would. Todd, it's an honor of mine. In the last few days, I've been to Jamestown. I've been to Bismarck. Mm-hmm. I've had interviews in Fargo. Monday, we're going to bring our listeners the story of an incredibly brave gentleman who's living with dementia here in our state, here in Bismarck. Oh. We're going to tell his story on Main Street.
Oh.
We talked about the beautiful new Voorhees Chapel that's been revitalized on the Jamestown campus. Mm-hmm. We visited with the North Dakota State University president today.
Yep.
And Todd, it's our honor, and we hope that our listeners agree that it's valuable. Please make that call right now or get online at prairiepublic.org. And that wraps up Wednesday's Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us. Tomorrow on Main Street, we'll cut through the confusion on vaccines with experts from Essentia Health. From COVID and flu shots to protecting kids and older adults, we'll explore why immunizations matter, what's new this season, and how trust and science keep our communities healthy. It's an important conversation tomorrow here on Main Street. Before we go, consider pressing that donate button at prairiepublic.org. As we've told you today on Main Street, and we'll continue to ask during the pledge drive, now is an important, wonderful time for you to consider supporting Prairie Public with your sustaining membership. Until tomorrow, we hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you again Thursday right here on Main Street.